Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay and the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guests and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. If you have any comments you would like to make during this broadcast, you can feel free to call in. Here's the call-in number, area code 646-716-4893. I'll repeat that for you one more time, area code 646-716-4893. You can also email me at bonkay@aol.com. That's bonkaye@aol.com. For those people who may be listening for their first times and they're not familiar with this show, you can always look at the information on my website at gayhusbands.com. And I just want to make a couple announcements before we get started. I'm really excited because the weeks are just passing by so quickly, and soon we're going to be getting together and gathering in Houston, Texas, for the weekend of March 2nd and 3rd. This is our second healing weekend in Houston, and I just am so excited about going down there and seeing some of my wonderful Texas women, as well as other women from all over the country. So if you would like to join us there for the healing weekend, there's no charge for the workshops. You know, you just have to pay your cost of the expense of the hotel and your flight and food, but, you know, it's well worth it to get into a group of women who can understand every word you're saying and who understand every feeling you're having. And I know that after one of these healing weekends, we've had them in Florida, Philadelphia, I have them each year, and now in Texas, women just feel so much stronger, wonderful friendships are made, a great new support team is formed, and I think it just does wonders for people who come there. So if you're interested in joining us, we still have time for you to get registered and on board, once again, at bonkay@aol.com. And in the upcoming weeks, we're going to be talking to some of our women coming to Houston. And these are women who are really inspirational. Tonight I have one of my favorite people of all time, Wendy. She's going to be joining me tonight. But next week we'll be having Debbie from Florida, who runs the Straight Spouse Awareness Program there, which focuses a lot on minority women and women involved, you know, in minorities as far as the church. And the following week after that, we're going to have our friend Grace on the show. Grace always inspires women who are in a situation where they can never get a confession as far as learning how to move ahead, even in spite of the fact that you may have what I classify as a straight gay husband. That's a gay husband living in a straight clothing for his whole life. And many times these guys go out and they get married again or get a second wife or third wife or fourth wife just to keep up the pretense that they're straight. So these women will be joining me over the next few weeks. And Misty's still on vacation. And she's traveling, not on vacation, but she's doing some work outside the state. So she sends her love to everybody. But in the meantime, we'll be carrying on her behalf. So I'd like very much to welcome Wendy. Wendy, how are you?
I am great. We are enjoying beautiful Texas weather.
I hope it's not too hot.
Is no, it? It's wonderful. Perfect. I hope it stays on for the next...
I know, in Texas it is hot.
Next 3 weeks. We are in lows in the 50s, highs in the 70s.
Mm.
So to me that's perfect.
Yeah, well, I hope I won't get too bad in the next few weeks until I get there.
No, I hope.
Try to keep those temperatures down, Wendy. Wendy,
well,
you were at
the... It's pretty warm compared to the rest of the country, I think.
Yeah, exactly. I like the 50s. 70s, I know I'm getting close to 80, and in Texas, it is hot.
Oh, but, no, this is beautiful weather. February is wonderful.
Yeah, I know. But I'll be there in March. I hope it stays wonderful.
Yeah.
But... You know, Wendy, I want to, maybe you could say a few words to people because you were at our Texas Houston get together last year.
Mm-hmm.
And tell me, you know, maybe let people know how it affected you.
Well, I will tell you, thinking about it now compared to thinking about it a year ago is very different. I was a nervous wreck thinking about it last year and feeling like, I didn't know what people were going to say, what they would think of me, whether they would understand, what the other people would be like, whether they would be accepting me, whether, you know, I just was very nervous and but excited to finally meet somebody who had been down similar path as I have.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, because at that point, I really hadn't, well, I had met one other person. I'd met Lynn about a few months prior, but that was it. And so it's still hard to believe, even though you say it over and over and over, that there's so many of us. To see people in the flesh, I think there were, what, 14 of us, I think, then?
Uh-huh.
Was just amazing. And I bonded immediately, and it was just surreal. You know, that first meal we had together that Friday night, and it was just amazing. And how we all have a different variation of the same theme. And I realized that in a lot of ways my story was not as bad as some people. And realized that I did have that I had been through a lot, that I had kind of forgotten how traumatic it was. So people, you know, it was just very supportive, very supportive.
Uh-huh. I think it's so important when you're going through this particular time in life that you meet others that have shared this road of, you know, or this journey that you're going through.
Mm-hmm.
Because no matter how many times I tell people, well, there are millions of us living like this, you still feel so isolated and
right.
alone.
Exactly. Exactly.
And, you know, we were talking a little bit tonight in our chat room, and I think, you know, maybe you could agree with this, that, you know, even when our husbands won't come out of the closet, you know, you don't want to be stuck in there with them.
Right.
Because even if they're refusing to come out or they want to live their life of secrecy, you know, you being trapped in that same closet with them is so deteriorating to you.
Right.
So the fact that if you're not, you know, you don't have people you can talk to about it, or you feel
right.
funny talking to your friends and neighbors.
Right.
Being in a safe environment like this where you can yes. tell anything and everybody
yes.
feels exactly what you're feeling.
Right.
You don't need any explanation. You don't have to make any apologies.
Right.
You don't have to feel stupid.
And nobody's saying, how did you not know? Or
right, exactly.
how could this be? Or are you sure? There's nobody saying those kind of things. So.
Exactly. It feels
very
so
helpful.
Good just to meet a group of people who have experienced it. And you see these are strong, wonderful women, you know, like you, who have, you know, who are intelligent, you know, from
right.
all walks of life.
Right.
You know,
so
it's not
you
like...
feel like you weren't crazy to have gotten yourself into this, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very interesting to see the different phases that of recovery or where people are in the journey. You know, there were people there that who'd gone way past where I had been, and there are people that were just starting out, and it was very interesting to hear each story and be able to offer encouragement to people that were just, you know, kind of had the deer in headlights still. And realize, and it was self-affirming for myself to realize when you tell your story again and again, you realize, wow, I really did come through this, you know. So it was very strengthening for me, but also very nice for me to be able to offer support to other people too. So it's really exhausting, but wonderful.
Yep, it is. It's mentally exhausting, but when you get out of there, you just feel like you're not alone for real.
Right, absolutely.
And that
absolutely.
People really understand exactly
right.
what you're going through.
Right.
And, you know, a lot of friendships are made and contacts are made
right.
and support, you know, that moves ahead.
Right.
And, in
right.
fact, I know that our group here in Philadelphia that were here in September, they even started their own Facebook page, and
oh.
they're in touch with each other. You know, so they're always there to support each other,
yeah.
which is really great. Because, you know, one thing with Gay Husband Recovery is I tell women, in fact, one of our women from September dropped me a note today. I won't mention her name, but she's a wonderful, wonderful woman who's very strong, and she's a leader. And she was having a bad day because of, you know, several circumstances that happened.
Yes.
And I tell women that no matter, you know, how free you think you are of this situation, and no matter how much you feel you're moving ahead, Mm-hmm. You know, it's like a long recovery period mm-hmm. because there's a lot of residual scarring.
Yes.
And it only takes, you know, a certain incident to happen that brings you right back to that space.
Right.
So it's not like it's all over and you're never going to think about it again. It takes a long time to heal.
Right. It changes who you are.
It really does. And mm-hmm. just rebuilding your own life back, it doesn't take a month or a year. It takes years to find, you know, to get back to where you need to be. It's a continuous, you know, growing experience and mm-hmm. a repair experience. And, you know, I was talking to another therapist today, and I said to her, many of our women are what I call broken women.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were either broken before they got into these relationships, mm-hmm. you know, so they were very vulnerable. They either came from, you know, situations where there was abuse when they were growing up or alcoholism, mm-hmm. drugs, mm-hmm. or low self-esteem, or, you know, a lot of other circumstances or bad relationships prior to the time they married their gay husbands. But if you're not strong going in, you're going to be really beaten down going out.
Mm-hmm.
And even if you're strong going in, you're still a different person when you come out of it.
Yes.
So, you know, you don't want to keep making the same mistakes and finding, you know, predatory kinds of guys who are going to be looking for weakened women.
Right.
You know, you really have to build yourself up again. And, you know, like I say, there's a lot of work involved there. I know there certainly was for me. How about for you?
Yes, absolutely. And I'm, you know, as you know, I don't know who all is listening. He doesn't know me, but, you know, it's been, wow. I guess my first contact with you was 2007. Wow. So, you know, I've come a long, long way. But there are days when I feel like I've got so much farther to go, or sometimes I feel like I'm right back where I started again. Yeah, those are the days when it's good to talk to somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And also, you know, you can't realize that you can get through something until you have to walk through it. So all of this devastation that I walked through tells me that I can walk through it again. And it's not always fun, and, you know, it's not what I necessarily would have chosen. It's not my happily ever after by any means. And so I think you get a lot of waves of acceptance. There's a lot of layers of acceptance you have to get through. And I'm still struggling with the having to accept that I really, really, really am alone. And I really have to make big decisions now about my house and repairs and remodeling that I never dreamed I'd have to do alone. And those are the struggles I'm having right now. But that's really, even though they seem big to me right now, I have to go back and look at the beginning and think of, like, all the other things that I have walked through.
Exactly. And you know what? Yeah. I think when you live for them at any particular moment, you have a lot of obstacles always facing you.
Right.
And especially when you're a single, you know, mother or a single person.
Right.
You know, a whole new line of issues.
Yeah. So, I, you know, it helps to have other people who have, like you and others, who know that how far I came to help me believe in myself again, that I can go through this struggle that I'm in now, too. So, just
well, one thing
so,
I would like
so
to
important.
Say, Wendy, that you may not agree with, but you don't have to. That's okay.
Right.
I think you really underestimate your story as far as when you say how much, you know, worse other people's were.
Mm-hmm.
Yours was really bad. And I don't think that people could understand it quite as well until it was so well articulated in, you know, Straightwise Shattered Lives Part 2.
Right.
And your story, I, you know, I must have read it probably 5 or 6 times because I had to keep reading it.
Yeah.
Because every time I read it, it made me cry, to be honest with you.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, with different parts. That's the effect that it had on me.
Right.
Because, here, you know, it was just such a prime example of a wonderful woman who's trying to do the right thing, and no matter how right you would do it, it was
right.
never right enough.
Right.
And when you start doubting yourself and you start questioning what are you doing wrong, as
right.
all of us do in these relationships, we can't understand why we keep trying so hard and nothing ever gets fixed.
Yep.
You know, it's so broken, and when our husbands can't be honest with us, you know, when instead of taking responsibility for their actions, they're just
mm-hmm.
finding fault with you.
Right.
Making you feel like you're the one who has something wrong with you, not them.
Right.
Then it just strips away every feeling you have, and you articulated that so beautifully in Straight Wives, Shattered Lives, Part 2. And
well, it was from the heart. I mean, I just kind of spoke from where those raw feelings were, and it all came out, I guess.
Right. And, I mean, you had no easy time with him. So can you tell us a little bit about, you know, how you met your husband, your ex-husband?
Let's see. I was, I'll go back to my high school college history. I was very straight-laced and pretty sheltered and no social experience. My strength was being a good student, being a good girl. Academically, I did well in school, and that was what I lived for, to feel okay. So although, you know, through high school, I had those feelings that I wished that I was popular or wished that somebody was interested in me and all those things, but I never felt worthy of it. So it was a heartache from the beginning, I guess. And so I went through college and, you know, had some great experiences and a lot of independence, and I went to school out of state and had to be on my own and did a lot of things on my own, but never in the social realm. I went into a pretty bad depression after college, was never diagnosed, nothing was ever done about it. I was too ashamed to tell anybody how I felt. So I ended up moving to Texas to get a job from the East Coast. And I started working, and my life kind of, you know, big changes and new things. And I was fine, and I was starting out, and I never was dating. And I did meet my ex-husband in the church. He was a choir director, and I was in the choir, and I really wasn't that attracted to him or anything, but he was okay, you know. Anyway, he called me to ask me out, and I was just stunned. I just couldn't get over it. And he was a good person. He was a teacher, and, you know, in the church, of course, and all that. So, and good morals, and you know, not too aggressive, which was good for me because I was so shy. And so a lot of these qualities about him I thought were good turned out to be, you know, other things later on. But I fell head over heels, and I think I fell because I had never experienced anyone interested in me, and so I just became enthralled with the whole idea of it all.
Uh-huh.
So we were married, within a year of meeting, because I was 28. He was 30, and within 2 years of our marriage, we had a child. And
how was your marriage in the beginning?
It was okay. He worked, well, before we were married. He worked very long hours.
Uh-huh.
He came home late at night. He was a teacher and a band director, and had to work late. It was very I just thought this was wonderful. He was ambitious. He worked hard. These were all wonderful qualities. But surely when he was with me and we were married, then he would not want to be at working that late. I was wrong about that.
Uh-huh.
But I just talked it up to his ambition. I really did. I didn't. Started to bother me, but I just kept thinking it was going to be better. I just was naive, and I had always, you know, always wanted to have a family. So when my daughter came along, you know, that preoccupied me.
Uh-huh.
Probably a year after she was born, he was working at the church and working his other job, and he was just never home. And I did put my foot down on that. And made him give up the part-time job because we had enough money because I was working. Anyway, I started, his lack of attention toward me didn't bother me that much because I didn't think I was that worthy of it anyway. And I had no basis of comparison. I had never had anybody interested in me before, so I didn't know you know, what to expect. But as time went on, I would try to talk to him. I would try, you know, I wasn't feeling it, and I would look at magazines. I would read articles. I would find books. What am I doing wrong? What can I do to get him to be attracted to me? But I never thought it was anything major. I just thought, well, if I just did more things, or if I was better, or I, you know, whatever, did something, it would get better.
How was your sex life with him?
Not much.
Mm-hmm. Was it ever much in the beginning?
I don't know what anybody else's is.
Yeah, I guess,
okay,
you know, it's hard
to
compare it to when you didn't have anything
to
compare it to.
Right, I don't.
Exactly.
But I did get to the point where I was the one having to initiate. And then I would hear people who I worked with say things, you know, at work. And it
uh-huh.
made me feel very ashamed, because they were saying things about how they couldn't get their husbands off of them. And that
uh-huh.
was certainly not happening for me. So I would read magazine articles. I would just like, what is normal? I didn't know, and I certainly wasn't going to talk to anybody about it. I was too shy. So, you know, we had our son, and then, you know, you just get busy with kids and all that, so you start attributing it to that, and then, well, he's busy, well, this, well, that. You just start accepting the excuses. And
uh-huh.
then, you know, I would find, even when it was summertime or it was on vacation time, still was not interested. And so it just started tearing me up. But I certainly didn't.
Now, did you internalize that this was your fault?
Yeah, yeah. And he was never, and I think this is different than a lot of the women that I've talked to. He never said an ugly thing to me, ever. To this day, he
uh-huh.
has never said an ugly thing to me. So I had nothing to stand on to be mad at him,
uh-huh.
you know. And later on down the road, my spirit just fell apart. I disintegrated.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't really know why I was disintegrating. Looking back, I understand it more. The subtle rejection just broke my spirit. But
it was an ongoing, continual rejection. It
right.
wasn't over.
And he would work. And then
an
I
issue.
Started seeing him treating the kids the same way he was treating me, as far as ignoring, you know, some of the narcissistic behaviors, self-absorbed, always
uh-huh.
an excuse. Why, you know, something else was always more important than we were. And
uh-huh.
and that's when I got on the whole idea of workaholism and work addiction, and I started reading about that, and that helped me feel like it wasn't me. But it still wasn't fixing anything, but at least I wasn't feeling quite as responsible. And
uh-huh.
I was, you know, I totally believed in marriage. I had nothing to stand on to even think about divorce, although the thought crossed my mind that, you know, it would be, at least divorced people had a weekend off from their kids, and I was here a single parent practically, but I still didn't get a weekend off. But I believed in marriage. I didn't feel like we did agree on a lot of things. Financially, we had no problems, you know, talking, you know, day-to-day things about what to eat, and you know, just all the running the household, we agreed on everything.
Uh-huh.
So I just didn't feel like there was enough. But it did cross my mind. I thought, you know what, if I divorced him, he would never have time to see these kids. I couldn't put my kids through that. So
uh-huh.
I just dismissed it. But I would start writing about, you know, but I certainly did not share it with anybody. So,
uh-huh.
Fast forward 23 years of marriage.
And in your mind, the concept of gay never came to light, right?
Never. Never. Absolutely never.
Mm-hmm.
He had gay friends. I mean, not even, well, I wouldn't, I wouldn't even say they were that close of friends, but, you know, there were gay people in his life, but he never said anything about them. He was very accepting, just like I was. They had partner, those friends of his had partners, so, you know, I didn't, you know, nothing, no flamboyancy, no super creative, none of the stereotypical things that,
right,
that I thought of gay back in the 80s, 90s was. Absolutely nothing. Absolutely nothing. And I think that's the hardest thing for people that haven't been through this to really understand. And that was what was so great on this weekend, to see people that, you know, you didn't have to explain that part.
Mm-hmm.
And to this day, there's people I work with that that don't know, because I just can't bear trying to explain all that.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, when my son was 16, back in the day, we just had one family computer, and I was checking the history on the computer, just like I'm supposed to as a parent, to make sure that, you know, my son's not doing bad things on the computer. But it was always sports things that came up. That's his love. And so nothing, you know, I was just kind of going through the motions. And then one night, there before me were gay porn sites. I just couldn't believe it. I just couldn't believe it.
Now, did you think they were your sons?
Well, you know, it crossed my mind for about 5 seconds, but I didn't ever see him as being my son. Had a girlfriend, and I just, you know, I'm like, no, this can't, no, I didn't know. I immediately went to him, my husband.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I still had to be sure. So I looked at the history, and it shows, you know, when those sites were visited. And so the next night, it just so happened that my son had not been on the computer. He had been doing homework and stuff, and hadn't been on the computer. So then I knew the next night. Then I knew absolutely it was him. And immediately things started, you know, the gears start going and going, oh, wow, could this really happen? Could somebody be gay, really marry somebody? You know, it was just so foreign to me. I had never heard of it. But I had enough strength to confront him on it the next day, with, you know, not in front of the kids, but he totally denied everything. Totally denied everything. What history? What are you talking about? I'll tell you which websites I was on, and, you know, just totally defensive, which I was used to that. He was always defensive about everything. And so I'm not an arguing person. I'm like, okay, well, you know, I know what I'm talking about, and we are going to talk about this. And so next day after that, suddenly there's some new program on our computer where everything's cleaned off, and that stunned me that he could do that fast. But he tells me, oh, you know, I just decided it's time to clean the computer. And I mean, this is somebody that I, you know, as much as he rejected me and wasn't interested in me, I totally, totally, totally trusted him. Totally. Totally trusted him. And this is what just shook me. And how, you know, so then you start questioning everything. And he did try to say it was Blake that had been on the computer, and I said, no, it wasn't. And I'm gonna have to talk to you later. I've got to think about this or whatever. And so it took about a week of me just saying, you have got to come clean with me. And finally, he went off somewhere and wrote a letter to me and you know, gave it to me, trying to say that he was bisexual. And in the meantime, got on your website. You know, I just did a Google search going, does this really happen? And sure enough, it does happen. And a lot of answers started coming to me. Okay, well, this is starting to make sense. I mean, at the same time, I was stunned and scared and, you know, just totally startled that somebody, this has gone on behind my back, I also was relieved to a lot of things I understood now. Okay, this makes sense. No wonder he wasn't interested in me. So that helped a little bit, but...
Now, I'm just curious, because when you first found this out and as startled as you were, did you feel in any way responsible for this?
Yeah, oh yeah, that was another, how did this get by me? Right.
Or do you feel
sort
that
of, well,
maybe...
Well, sort of at the beginning.
Like, did you do something wrong that he would turn to men? Because I think a lot of our women feel like that. You know, that maybe they weren't a good enough wife, maybe they didn't fulfill these needs. You know what? He wasn't gay when I married him. You know, how did he become gay?
Right.
I think a lot of women are confused.
Yeah, and I guess what helped me was really, you know, reading things on your website that made it all, for me, it made sense because based on his background. He grew
mm-hmm.
up in a very demanding, judgmental family, single child, and so it made sense to me that he would have hidden that when I started learning that this happens, it made sense that he would pretend that he wasn't gay to himself. That's what I thought. I sort of understood. I truly believed, and I guess you told me that at the beginning too, that I think he really didn't. He really thought I would cure being married to me would cure him, and
mm-hmm.
I do think that. I think that to
mm-hmm.
this day, that he just had to be accepted by his by his parents and by his peers, and it was so, too shameful of a thing. So he had to do this. But what bothered me was, when did you start, you know, going on these websites all of a sudden? That's the part that got me upset, was, you know, why couldn't you just have come and told me when I was going through because I did go through another major depression before that, fell apart, was suicidal, and he just stood there and didn't think he had anything to do with my feeling of despair, which a lot of it was. So
mm-hmm.
that part... You know, in hindsight, that part really, really bothered me. But I, knowing him, I thought I was lucky enough just to get him to say what he did say. So I didn't want to push it and make him even more defensive. But anyway, when he told me he was bisexual, I didn't believe that, because my thought was, well, then why? If you're bisexual, that means you're interested in both, and you're not interested in me. So I don't buy that. And it is interesting, as insecure as I was, I absolutely did not give it any second thoughts that I had to get out of the marriage.
Mm-hmm.
I absolutely had to get out. There was
mm-hmm.
no way I was going to stay married. And I know so many women struggle with all that. And everybody's story is different, and your philosophy of marriage is different, and, you know. So, you know, each person has her own story with that. But for me, it had deteriorated already, you know. So it wasn't going to be a big surprise to a lot of people that I was going to divorce. So I absolutely told him right off, you know, I can't stay married to you. And he was fine with that. He seemed real fine with that, and that kind of surprised me a little bit, because then I thought, wow, you know.
Right, he's not even fighting
like
to stay in the marriage, right?
Yeah, yeah. So we kind of made some decisions about, you know, what we were going to do and what we were going to say and not say to the kids. And I absolutely could not wrap my head around all this, so there was no way I could talk to my kids. So we
mm-hmm.
just decided to not go there with the kids at that point. But I immediately went into therapy.
Mm-hmm.
I had to. I was at my rock bottom. I didn't know which way was up, you know. I was on my recovery map. That first column is where I was. And just stunned and ashamed. I was ashamed, but ashamed that I didn't want anybody to know that this had happened, because I just, you know, I guess you're right, Bonnie. I guess I did think, you know, I must have done something to make this happen.
I think we all think that, Wendy. You know, we go into
yeah.
these marriages And when they don't work and are husbands, even though you say that yours never said anything bad to you, you don't have to have the words to make you feel inadequate. It's the actions that make you feel inadequate. So even if they're not saying it to you, they're acting like that towards you.
And so go ahead.
No, so I'm saying it just, you know, plays into your whole self-esteem issue. You think that, you know, look, I married him in good faith. He loved me when he married me. Why doesn't he want me? You know, it has to take its toll on who you are as a person. And, you know, even if you don't know why they're rejecting you, well, especially if you don't know why. But even when you find out that they're gay, you know, I know that in the beginning I thought, I can fix this. You know, if I try to be a better wife, you know, my husband will learn to love me. Mine tried the bisexual route, too. And that's why I'm so against that whole terminology, bisexual, because it gives women this false illusion that the man is making a choice. And if he's not choosing you, if he still wants men, then you're not doing something right. And that's not the case at all. But I kept thinking I could fix this. You know, I'm going to be the best wife in the world. I'm going to make sure that, you know, he doesn't even think about going with anybody else. And, you know, I really did try in the beginning, you know, for many, many months to just keep doing better, you know, as a wife. And no matter what I would do, it didn't change anything. But that's what I think that a lot of us feel, that sense of, you know, where did we go wrong that we can't keep them happy as a woman.
And then for me, it, the rejection became so many times that you just quit trying after, you know. There were two or three times where, occasions where we were on vacation and the kids were going to stay with my parents and we were going to go off for a weekend, and then, you know, suddenly he gets sick and can't go. And then another time when my parents came down here and we went down to Galveston for a night and all this, he gets sick and we have to drive back. I mean, I was so embarrassed. I was so embarrassed to have to come back that same night and face my parents. I just, it was just awful. And that's what, those were the seeds to my depression and that I didn't verbalize, but those were things that constant rejection of, and constantly wanting, you know, willing it to happen, and it didn't. And but then who are you going to, you know, you can't go talk about that at work. I couldn't talk to anybody about it. So it just, I just started believing the lack of self-worth, and I'm still fighting that to this day. You know, that really, really believing that I am worthy in the in that area. I mean, I definitely feel worthy at work. I feel worthy, you know, as a parent, you know, and all that. But when it comes to men, I do not feel adequate at all, and I don't know if that I ever will. I don't know.
Yeah, well, you might in time. Look, it took me a long time to feel that way again. But of course, I didn't put in, I didn't serve the time that you served in a marriage either. So I didn't
like
have
I'm
all
back.
Those years of breaking down.
So I, you know, I think part of the problem, and I know in therapy, my therapist, you know, said you have got to get mad. You've got to get mad at him, and I have a hard time with that. That was the emotion that was not allowed in my family, and so, you know. I still
Has that changed
up,
at all?
I still put up with him. I mean, I have come to the realization that he will never understand what he's done to me. He will never apologize for what he's done because he doesn't think he's really done anything wrong. Now, he's back in the closet. As you know, after we decided to divorce, about a month, and then we finally started planting the seeds with the kids that we were going to do at the end of the school year. He up and didn't come home one night. And not that that was terribly unusual, but it got to be about 10 o'clock and he wasn't home. And he had told my son that he was on his way home and at 8:30, and here it was 10 o'clock. And you know, where's Dad? I'm like, you know, my in my heart I was like, I, you know, I hope he's just in a ditch somewhere because that sure would, like, make things a lot easier. And 10:30 at night I get a phone call from him, and he's in a county jail. And, I mean, talk about totally out of character for this person. Fine, upstanding teacher, high morals, high ethics. This was just unbelievable. So he had decided to go gallivanting off in another county. And, you know, you have said that once they realize who they are, they become adolescent, and the adolescent behavior surfaces, and that certainly did happen. It stunned me.
Mm-hmm.
But he got himself into some trouble, and I will, to this day, never really fully know what happened, but I did see some police reports, and, you know, I know he wasn't as innocent as he claims to be.
Mm-hmm.
But we had to go through, I had to explain to my son that father was in jail,
mm-hmm.
and had to go bail him out. We had to go drive and get his impounded car. We had to go through the court system. I mean, it was awful, awful.
Did they ever find out, did your children ever find out the real reason?
I never went into great detail with them. No,
mm-hmm.
I did not. I did not.
Were you afraid it would come out in the public eye?
Exactly. Because he's a teacher and we work in the same school district, and I was petrified it was going to get in the news,
mm-hmm.
in the media. And my son was actually a student in his class, so it was very, very complicated and distressing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had to carefully. I mean, this is when I went on blood pressure medication.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when I think back to it now, it's just so harrowing. I just can't believe it really happened to me. But anyway.
You know what it is also, Wendy, and I think other women can really relate to this too.
Uh-huh.
I mean, here you have a guy who's part of a family for all these years,
mm-hmm.
as many of our women are in long-term marriages, 20, 30, 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
And yet they don't seem to, I mean, they must compartmentalize so greatly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That they can't even realize what possible harm they could be doing to their family by putting themselves
right
in dangerous situations where if they get exposed, and many of them have, you know, I've
yeah.
had numerous women whose husbands were, you know, exposed,
mm-hmm.
you know, in the newspaper,
yeah, yeah.
and all kinds of situations where their children are left holding the bag,
mm-hmm.
you know, and they have to, you know, be around people in school knowing this. I mean, they don't have any consideration for what this is going to do to their family.
Right. And that's the part that really stunned me. And that's when the feeling of betrayal is just, you start, lack of trust. All, you know, trust was just shattered.
Mm-hmm.
And that really does a number on you. When the person who you think you could trust the absolute most in the whole world starts, you know, totally doing things that are, you know, not only behind your back, but outrageous. It just shakes your world.
And did he give you any indication that he never had done anything outside the marriage?
Right. And I really don't think he had. I think he was just, once I found that stuff on the computer, I think
mm-hmm.
that was the first stage, and I don't know how long that had gone on. Although, you know, I remember he did get up. I did find him on the computer in the middle of the night sometimes. So
mm-hmm.
that probably went on for a while.
Long time.
And that's harmless as far as, you know, getting caught or anything in his mind. So I really don't think he started acting on anything until after he had, you know, I figured it out and he sort of half admitted it. And then I think he was stunned that I didn't throw him out of the house. So I think he got a little bold and decided to explore this a little bit more. I did ask him to go to the therapy as well,
mm-hmm.
and he only went one time. We didn't go together. He wouldn't go together, and I did ask the therapist after I went back many times.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was just trying to figure out how long has he known this, because I was trying to figure out what level of betrayal is this. I mean, I can sort of understand that you married me, you thought it would go away, you know, I can go along with that, but once you knew, how long did you carry on this charade? And the therapist led me to believe that, or are you just questioning things right now? You know, maybe you're not sure or whatever. And the therapist seem to think that, no, he's pretty sure. There's not a question here. And that really stunned me, too, because it just started
yeah, you know what? I think they know for many, many years since they're children.
Yeah.
And they may suppress it or they may, you know, push it down.
Yeah.
Or pretend like it's not there.
Right. And I definitely, that's the part that starts the hurt, you know,
mm-hmm.
that all that had been going on behind my back. Just really, really felt betrayed. But anyway, after this whole incident where he miraculously was able to keep his job, I mean, it's just amazing. But and he denied and you know, made up all this stuff with all his colleagues that he'd been duped and it was been framed and, you know, it was nothing he had done. And, of course, they all believed him, just like I had believed everything he said before.
Mm-hmm.
And he just went right back in the closet because it was it was pretty harrowing. And I think he decided he better not, as long as he's working still, he better not try anything. So he to this day, you know, thinks that everything's back to normal and, you know, nothing really happened. And he's just, as you said, compartmentalized it. And almost thinks that he did me a favor by leaving me, and now, you know, I can have my own life.
Well, he did do you a favor by
always
leaving you.
Always twist it around. And
yeah, exactly.
You know, thinks that I'm just, you know, happy as a clam, and, you know, thanks to him, you know, whatever. But just still very, very self-absorbed.
It's all about them, right?
Yeah, but I have had to, part of my healing has been that I have had to not let him take up so much space in my life and have had to just let it go and accept the fact that as much as I would love to have a conversation with him about all this and really when did you know and why did you do this and all this, he would lie to me. And
exactly.
So it would be do no good, and I have got to just let go of him, and I have pretty much. I mean, I'll never can completely because of my kids, but I take whatever he says with a grain of salt, and my kids have learned to do that.
Let me ask you this, Wendy. If he would sincerely come to you and say, I want to talk to you,
mm-hmm.
you know, it finally hit me after mm-hmm. all these years, the damage I did to you, and I am so sorry. Wouldn't it make you feel differently, though?
Yeah, but it ain't going to happen. But yeah,
no,
oh, yeah, it would absolutely help me a lot.
You know, this is what I tell women, that, you know, I'm not a believer in forgiveness if it's not earned.
Yeah.
That, you know, I feel that you'll never have closure if you just blindly forgive someone. Now, of course, not everybody agrees with me on that.
Right.
But I feel that I was unable to forgive my ex-husband until he one day really said it and meant it.
Wow,
and he was willing to listen to me about why, you know, what it did to my life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because before that he would sometimes say, okay, get over it, you know, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to hurt you, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
But it was said with total insincerity.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it took maybe 15 years until he was willing to just say, okay, I'm willing to listen to what you're feeling. And then
mm-hmm.
he said, I am so sorry that I did that
to
you. And you know, that really changed my feelings with him.
Mm-hmm.
And I really was able to forgive him. And it wasn't, you know, it's not a matter of forgiving being gay, because I always say gay is not a choice.
Right, right.
It's what you do with it.
And I had always believed that too. Right.
Right?
Right. And I don't think he has a choice. He was born this way. I understand why he suppressed it. But, boy, that would be a shock for him to ever, because he has a narcissistic personality that he can't see anybody else's point of view. And I've had to do a lot of this talk with my kids. Now, 3 years after my divorce, it was 1 year. I'm trying to think about 2 or 3 years after my divorce, I had to get to the point where I had to tell my kids the real reason why we divorced.
Mm-hmm.
Up until then, I didn't tell them, because it was just too much, and
mm-hmm.
It was just too much for them to handle. The divorce was hard enough. Once I told my kids, then they believed me. They were shocked. They did not know. They were shocked. But since then, you know, they've had to have their own relationship with their dad, and I have, you know, allowed that to happen and do not badmouth him because he, you know, they are 50% genetically
mm-hmm.
him. And so
exactly.
I have to be very, very careful because they're watching everything I'm saying and they're modeling me and how to deal with people. And so I've had to be, you know, above take the high road.
Mm-hmm.
But I have spent a lot of time explaining to my kids who are 22 and 25 now to help them understand why he drives them absolutely nuts, you know, when they're with him. And we've had conversations about, you know, you're going to have to set your boundaries with him because he doesn't understand when he's gone too far. He can't see your point of view and
mm-hmm.
those kind of things. And so I'm not bashing him. I'm just helping them to understand him. But, you know, I feel my kids are damaged, and I don't I have tried to get them to go to therapy, and they have been reluctant. But I keep the conversation open and help them understand.
Yes, and while I have you on the phone about that, please keep in mind that we're starting our new, you know, support group for adult children of gay fathers.
Right, and I'm trying to get my daughter to do it.
Yeah, I mean, it's starting this week, in case you know, are listening to this show.
Oh, wow, yeah, I think that's very, very important.
It is.
Very
I mean,
important.
I know some people really need to connect with other people who have gone through this.
Right.
Because it creates such issues for them. Absolutely.
Right, and she really has more. And when I did tell them, it was a great conversation. They didn't fully, you know, it was such a stunning thing for them. They didn't fully understand at the time, but they both said it wasn't the gay part that bothered them about their dad. It was the abandonment that he was never around for them. And those are the kind of issues that my kids are gonna carry with them into their next relationships, but that abandonment was a result of him being gay and being ashamed of it, and so then he developed this whole narcissistic personality. So it's all interrelated.
Mm-hmm.
But I do worry over my kids in that area. I mean, they've for the most part turned out amazingly well.
Mm-hmm.
But I do worry about my daughter and her inability to establish relationships. I worry that my son hasn't had a good model of what a husband should be.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, everybody has their issues in their families, and I guess my job is to try to keep the conversation open and help them understand their dad and not to take it personally. Now,
mm-hmm.
you know, they spent a week with him over Christmas without me, and boy, my daughter especially is realizing more and more, has more and more appreciation for what I put up with.
Mm-hmm.
And my son, too, I will say. My son has been much closer to me. I think he understands now that I was not the bad guy in breaking up the marriage.
And I think that's really important, too, because a lot of our women, you know, are going through that, and, you know, something that I'm going to be talking about in the upcoming months about the importance of telling your children the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason for that is because we have so many women who are part of this network whose kids have alienated them.
Yeah.
Because they're blaming their mothers for the divorce.
Right. I went through a little bit of that.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Because they don't know what the real reasons are.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's natural for kids not to want to have change in their life and have their family broken apart.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're not telling them what the real reason is for the marriage ending, then they're blaming you.
Mm-hmm.
And especially when their fathers are saying, it's not me who wants to break up the marriage, it's
right.
your mom.
Right.
So
right. And if you're not talking about it, they're going to come up with their own reasons.
Right, exactly.
You know,
they're going to say everything was fine. Why
right.
is my mother doing this?
And in our family, the issue was he was never home. He was a workaholic. He was never home. Well, when he got arrested and was put on administrative leave, suddenly he was home all the time. And so,
mm-hmm.
well, you know, why are you doing this if he's home? You know, how
right,
did you
exactly.
see a problem? You know, he's home. You know, everything's wonderful. And he was a little resentful because it even at age he was about 18. 16,
mm-hmm.
between 16 and 18 when Saul's coming down, it really affects them even when they're older.
matter the age. And
it does.
Just like when you find out somebody's divorcing, your immediate thought is, okay, who did what? Everybody does that, even if you're not supposed to, or you just start surmising, well, it must have been this or it must have been that. And I know, having gone through divorce, I felt that way. The eyes were on me, and you know, well, she must have this or she must have that, and it was very hard. And to this day, most of my coworkers do not know the real reason. Now they know how difficult he is, and so they're not totally surprised.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've been able to say enough to make it, you know, understandable, but I do, my friends are at a distance, those friends, because they don't really know the truth. But I have chosen to keep that out of the working relationship because it's just too hard to explain. I don't want to
sit
there and
everybody doesn't
have
to know about, right,
and
I
it becomes
agree.
A source of gossip. I live mm-hmm. in the South. One of my coworkers is very conservative Christian and believes that gays can be cured and
mm-hmm.
that it's a choice. And so I just have chosen not to get into it. And,
exactly.
And
a lot of people feel that way, and that's
that
fine.
But it does
yeah,
make
you,
it hard because I, you know, I only have a few friends that really, really understand my past, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why we need this weekend, because those are the friends that really understand my past.
Exactly.
Even friends who know, they don't really know. You know, I mean,
they haven't
walked in my shoes like all of us women have.
Well, I think you can know it, but it doesn't mean that you can relate and feel for it. I mean, sometimes people feel sorry for us, or they'll say, oh, I pity you. You know, we're not looking for pity. We're looking for understanding.
Right.
And unless you've lived this, you just don't understand it. It's like I can feel tremendous compassion for women who have breast cancer.
Right.
But I haven't had it, so I can't feel the exact pain that they're feeling.
Right.
I can feel the compassion, but not the pain. And I think it's important to find people who understand your pain.
Right.
That's what makes the connection, and that's what gives the support.
Right.
So I feel that's important.
And even a therapist can do a lot
mm-hmm.
to help you rebuild, but they can't walk that walk. They can't. So that component of connecting with other women has saved me, really. It really has. I don't think I could have done. I don't. I know I couldn't have gotten healed.
You know, it's
as
funny.
Well
I just
want to
mention one.
That.
I just want to change the subject for 1 second because this came up tonight in our chat room,
mm-hmm.
and it just so disturbs me. And I guess maybe you could address this too. You know, when you don't have the right therapy,
mm-hmm.
you know, I had a woman tonight. She's part of our group, and. You know, she said she had to ask us a question. She went to a new therapist, and the new mm-hmm. therapist said to her that there's a difference between sexual love and romantic love. And she said, well, what do you mean by that? And the therapist said to her that, you know, you have to be a little more open-minded, that just because somebody gets aroused by pictures of men doesn't mean he can't have romantic love for you. So if he has to fantasize by, you know, thinking about something before he makes love to you or while he's making love to you, one thing has nothing to do with the other.
Mm.
And I was so disturbed to hear that kind of advice coming out from a professional.
Wow, yeah.
That, you know, to me that's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard.
Yeah, I would find another therapist.
Right. But my point is that, you know, women are so vulnerable to start with.
Yeah.
And once again, here's, you know, the therapeutic community making you start doubting yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe
mm-hmm.
there's something
mm-hmm.
wrong with you because you don't want your husband fantasizing about a penis before he has sex with you.
That's not healthy, yeah.
Right. So women have to really be careful with the therapy.
Yes.
If you're not getting the answers you're looking for or you're not making the connection, you must stop. Right?
Yes, absolutely. Because my first experience with therapy was for depression, just for myself. And I had to go through 2 or 3 different ones just with that. So definitely knew that, and it's horrible. I mean, the first time I had to
go to a psychiatrist's office. I just felt like the whole world was watching me. I was afraid I was going to see somebody in the waiting room of the office. I mean, I was petrified. You have to learn how to navigate through all that, because the psychiatrist gives the medication, but they're usually not the one that does the therapy, and you got to find somebody else to do the therapy, and all of that was just foreign territory to me. But the first therapist I went to for my depression, I was trying, and this is, you know, well before I knew the truth about my husband, but I was trying to explain to her that he just doesn't have time for me, and you know, all this kind of stuff. And so she called him in. I'm like, this is great, because she's going to really give him a talking to and tell him that, you know, he needs to pay more attention to me and blah, 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 blah. Well, all she said was, you know, you just need to take Wendy out more.
Okay. Right.
When she said that, that was it for me. That was it. I was like, I'm not going back to her. She obviously doesn't get it. You know, your gut knows, your gut tells you, this person does not get it. And at that time, I had no clue what was coming down the path in 5 years, you know. But I knew in my heart that this lady did not understand and didn't really want to get into understanding. And so I had to change. I went through 2 or 3 different psychiatrist and 2 or 3 different therapists. So,
all right, you got to find the right help that works for you.
If your gut is telling you that this, you're not connecting, you got to find something else. And it's hard and it's scary, and you know, you don't know who to ask, but you owe it to yourself. I could not have done it without therapy as well. I needed to have someone where I could bare my soul, who was not going to go tell anybody else. And, and that was very helpful to me, and it put the burden off of my friends. You know, I didn't want to burden my friends with everything, because then you feel even worse. You know, here you feel like you're doom and gloom and upset, and then you're going to go dump on your friends, and that makes you feel even worse. So therapy was a really good component of my recovery. It wasn't the only thing, but it was, but I had to find what fit me right. And even medication, I had to change medications too. So, but I am off of medication and out of therapy. So it obviously did something for me, but it's just one
piece.
Well,
it was there when you needed it,
yes,
right?
Yes, and Bonnie, this whole network filled a void that was different than what therapy could do, too. So all these pieces together, you know, and you have to be willing to help yourself as well.
Mm-hmm.
But
you want to have to heal.
And that's where the way I helped myself was through my writing, expressing, getting things out on paper.
And let's talk a little bit about that, Wendy, because I know that I'm holding you over time, but you don't mind, right?
No, no.
Nothing like putting you on the spot on the show.
Just get me going.
But,
I can't shut up.
That's fine, Wendy, because I love every word you say. But Wendy first, you know, came to me with her recovery map a couple of years ago, and this was a form of therapy for her.
Right.
But you just can't understand how much of a form of therapy it was for everybody reading this. And I give this out at every meeting that, you know, I have.
Mm-hmm.
And I send it out to every person asking me for information, which is, you know, 40, 50 people every week.
Wow.
And it's the one thing that I get the most response back on, as, you know, as far as helping people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's Wendy's recovery map, because I think that, if nothing else, you always wonder, you know, if you are where you're supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
At any given point through this whole experience.
Mm-hmm.
And Wendy has it pretty well broken up into 4 different phases, or 5 phases now.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's so important that during your, you know, a lot of women who are listening to this particular show are new into our support network, and they may not be familiar with your list.
Mm-hmm.
So do you have the list with you?
Yes, I have it.
I have it with me, too.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the phase one is, you know, when you first find out, and like it's shock and awe,
mm-hmm.
also known as the nightmare I can't wake up from. So maybe you can read a little bit
okay.
of those different emotions
okay.
that you went
and,
through.
Yeah, and, you know, if you were looking at this, it looks like I sat down one day and said, I'm going to create this little map and all these phases, and that is not, that's not how it happened. What happened was I just started writing how I felt, and then, you know, as time went on, I added it as it went. So if you're not feeling all organized in your recovery, I was not all organized either. This is all in retrospect, looking back. So this first column was just, I couldn't think. All I could do was feel, and most of these are feeling kind of things. They're just words, and it was all swirling around me. Shock, betrayal, fear, questioning, no trust, clues missed, clues seen, relief, confusion, fragile, disbelief, shame, anger, despair, weak, blindsided, no dots to connect, secrecy, crisis, foolish, inadequate to cope, embarrassment, deer in headlights, can't think beyond the feelings, worry, worry, worry in so many directions, overwhelmed, can't breathe, isolation, so alone, that's in all caps, and how did this happen? And I felt this way for about 6 months.
And I think those, you know, especially the ones where you say you can't breathe, mm-hmm. I know that that's how I used to feel. Only I would add to that, you know, everybody has, you know, some additions, I'm sure.
Sure, of course.
You know, but to me it was always nauseousness and throwing up.
Yeah.
You know, I would close my head and envision this in my head, mm-hmm. what was going on, and it sent me right to the toilet bowl.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I think that, you know, it was just a matter that you can't think. You know, it's just always there. Did you feel that way, too? Mm-hmm. It was always hanging over your head?
And just a conflict of feelings. Like, at one minute, you're feeling relief, and the next minute, you're feeling, you know, scared to death. And it's just, nothing was consistent. There was no continuance. It was just scattered of everything. And
but did you feel like a preoccupation? Because
yes.
I just felt like this was always in front of my face.
Yes.
I mean, even when it wasn't, like,
yes.
it was always what I'm thinking about.
Yes. But I couldn't.
It was like I was going to the supermarket. My husband is gay.
Yes.
I'm going to the movies. My husband is gay. I'm going, yes. you know, whatever it was.
But you can't do anything about it. You just have to. It's all just, you know, like a movie going in front of you, but you can't do anything about it.
Exactly.
You can't wrap your head around it at first.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what that first column symbolizes. It's just this bombardment of, you know, total game changer, you know,
mm-hmm.
and just hit you blindsided. I mean, just totally hit me from out of nowhere. And, you know, I just absolutely couldn't say anything to anybody because I
mm-hmm.
didn't believe it was really happening, you know. So that lasted a long time. And
mm-hmm.
thankfully, over time, I learned that I wasn't alone, and I read, and I found books in the library, and I just started gradually over time, my subconscious started accepting that, you know, okay, this is reality, and you're going to have to do something about it.
Mm-hmm.
But I certainly had to let myself absorb it all first.
Okay, so then you went to phase two, which came about 6 months after discovery, right?
Right, when you're just accepting the things on the surface. You're not going very deep into
mm-hmm.
your psyche. You're just taking care of business on the surface. And I called that swim so you don't sink.
Mm-hmm.
And just basically survival. That was when I was having to handle, realizing and starting to accept that I had to handle everything by myself. I was overwhelmed in a new way, making choices alone, dealing with the nitty-gritty of separation and filing for divorce, which, by the way, that newsletter you had was so wonderful about all of that. That was wonderful.
Thank you.
I wish I had had that. That was wonderful.
Yeah, it really was.
Just a lot of nuts and bolts of exactly what to do. Oh, my goodness. It's like somebody holding your hand.
Mm-hmm.
dealing with accounts, paying the bills, dealing with the housing. For my situation, I had not done any of that. I raised the kids and everything, but he did all the finances, and so this was all new to me after 23 years. Breaking the news to the kids, dissolving the joint accounts, getting the utilities in my name, deciding how to wear my rings, even that little thing becomes a huge thing. Deciding who should know and who should not know, deciding how much to tell, attempting to negotiate, peeling yourself off of him is really, really what it is, and there's lots of layers. Looking at all of your belongings in a new way, when I had to start writing down all my household, everything, and how we're going to divide that up, and you're just like, I never dreamed I'd be doing this, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I so believe in marriage, you know. I just couldn't believe I was doing this, but I knew I had to do it. Weary of it all, and it's just begun. Keeping busy so as not to feel, establishing new routines, taking on more part-time work. I had a financial situation that I had to deal with. Taking on, facing family and close friends, finding a new normal, being careful about keeping the kids protected, watching what you say about him, resentment about everything, and looking forward with dread. And that, you know, we talked about that a little bit. I think that's the part when your anger starts coming out and you just want to just, you just want to vent it to the kids, just because it helps you to feel powerful, to be able to be mean about you, to say some ugly things about the spouse to the kids, makes you feel empowered. But that's not the way to do it.
It's dangerous doing that, and that's why I tell women, come to the chat room. You can vent and call your ex-husband all kinds of dirty, filthy names. It's fine.
Right.
Because I'd rather you vent it out there, because your children,
absolutely,
like you say, 50% of them are their father.
Mm-hmm.
50% is their father. And when you say bad things about their father, even if you're 100% legitimate, it's going to take its toll on them, because they say, that part of me is bad.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't want your children to ever have to feel that this has anything to do with them.
And you have to do some inward looking at yourself and going, why am I doing this? Because he's done that to me, so I'm trying to get back. And it makes me feel powerful, because otherwise you feel very, that's the whole thing. You feel like lack of control. And so that's really, when you start bad-mouthing, that's your way of controlling. And you got to say, wait a minute, that's not a healthy way to do it. I absolutely had to do that. And I feel like I did a pretty good job. It's hard, but I was really set on not doing that in front of my kids. So that went on. What do I have on there? Well, it went on about a year.
About a year, right?
Yeah.
And it's still like, you know, just treading lightly, because
yep,
you can't even sink yourself into the reality
right,
yet.
Right, just going through the motions of what I had to do. I mean, I had to, my lawyer was bugging me, you know, we have to have all your assets and divided and all, you know, all that stuff. You feel like you're walking through a movie, you know. You never dreamed you'd be doing this, but in a way, it's good to be busy, but at that point, you're not feeling anything. You're just going through the motions and going through what they call, mediation, where you're in one room with your lawyer and they're in one room with their lawyer, and wow, that was all new to me. I had never gone through that. And I happened to have gone through a hurricane right in the middle of all that, too. So I was dealing with insurance companies and things. So
yeah,
it was pretty traumatic.
Life still goes on, even with
pretty
the big mess in front
time
of you.
Yep.
Then you got to phase three.
Then I get to three, where I've gone through the divorce. I'm living on my own. I've got my account set up, but there's still a whole lot more to deal with. And it's kind of surprising. It's kind of shocking. You feel like, okay, I've gotten through this hump. Surely there's not any more to deal with, but there was, and that was what I called the mountain is still there to climb and having to think. And I come out from under all that mess, and I ask myself, is this all there is? I mean, because you're telling yourself you owe it to yourself to divorce, you can, you know, you deserve better than this. So I'm gonna, that gives you the energy and the tenacity to work through the divorce, and I'm not gonna put up, live a lie, and you're strong and all this, and then you get through it and you know what? It's not so great. So your family's not rallying as much, you're weary, you think, you know what, it'd been a lot easier if he was just here to pay the bills. Maybe I should go back. Maybe I should just let him come back. And that seems shocking to some people that you do, but I mean, I bet every single one of you has been through this. We'll say that.
Absolutely.
You start forgetting some of the real ugly stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, maybe it wasn't that bad. Maybe, you know, it would just be so much easier if somebody else could deal with something for a change, and you're really tempted to do that. I felt stuck. You're ready to go back to handling less, but you just don't want it to be him. You just want to have less to do. No roadmap. That was hard. What am I supposed to do now? Uncertainty. Which way is forward? Anger resurfaces. I don't want this new life. You know, in the beginning, you're saying you need to do this, and then you come back and go, wait a minute, I don't want this. I don't want him to see me dealing with it. I don't want him to think that he's off the hook. I went through a lot of mess with that in my head. Sadness resurfaces. You really are divorced. You really, you know, I just, ugh. Maybe there'll never be someone, never be a partner. Wasted all this time. I never have really been loved. Fear of the unknown. To tell the kids the whole truth or not. Who should be the one to tell? I went through a lot of that. He didn't want to tell the kids we were getting divorced. He didn't want to tell the kids anything. I had to be the one to do all of that.
Uh-huh.
To tell others of the past, others of the future, what do I say? Heavier questions that I was allowed to put off earlier, now I have to deal with. Should I sell the house? Should I change careers? What should I do? Big, heavy stuff. Some of the bad stuff has faded. You're almost tempted to go back. It would be easier in some ways. You're lonely but afraid to get out there, trying to move forward, but it's just so hard.
Uh-huh.
So a whole nother year of that. Ugh.
Well, then you got to the next year of phase four,
yes,
which was your new reality.
Yes. This just now, golly, what's this, 2012, I guess, is when I finally got to this point. And this is 5 years after, 5 years from when I found out.
Uh-huh.
The wounds have healed, but I'm still living with scars, accepting and adjusting. I can accept the fact that I am a divorced woman. I can say the D word at the beginning of all this.
Uh-huh.
Say I'm a divorced woman, and I tell some people I was married to a gay man. I did not cause this to happen. It happened to me. I think that's a big step.
Uh-huh.
He will never understand, excuse me, what he put me through, nor will he ever apologize for it. I have to accept that. This is not what I had envisioned for my life, but it is what it is, and I will be okay. This will not consume me anymore. That's a nice to get to that point.
Uh-huh.
I did the right thing in choosing to leave a toxic relationship, even though it meant breaking my vows. More inner peace and self-sufficiency, and there's less wrenching heartache and more joy. You know, it's not all roses, but it's more good than bad at this point. Able to be alone and not lonely most of the time. I won't say it's not all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Putting my story in writing and sharing with others to give support. By writing that out was very, very emotional for me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's tough, but it was good to get through it. Then there's the
Wendy, how about, you know, when you have your point, able to be alone and not lonely most of the time,
mm-hmm.
but isn't it true that often when we're with someone, we can be more lonely?
Yes. Oh,
you know, so women shouldn't feel, well, this is just now, I'm becoming lonely now. I think you can feel much more lonely living with somebody who's emotionally detached from you.
Right. And there's a quote, it's better to... be alone than to wish you were alone.
Mm-hmm. I like that.
Yes. Yes. But when in your times of despair, then you, instead of dealing with why you're upset, you go back and go, well, if I just had somebody, then I'd be happier. The grass is always greener kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Which I'm still fighting that. I'm still trying to cope with that. But, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, he calls and moans and groans to me still to this day. And some people say, why do you put up with this? Why don't you just hang up on him? And, you know, I think it's to help me realize how glad I am that he's not in my life. I think I need to hear him moaning and groaning and be able to say, okay, bye. It's empowering in a sick way, I guess, but to realize that he hasn't, that I really have come a long way and he still hasn't, and that's helpful to me. So,
So how about phase five, that you're not there yet?
That I'm not there yet. This is where I hope to be someday. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Setting new goals, venturing out more, taking trips, completing bigger projects around my house, giving back, paying forward, the help and support received along the way, my feminine spirit restored, feeling whole with or without a man in my life, and looking back with satisfaction, trusting myself. I still have a lot of trouble with that.
Mm-hmm.
Embracing the future rather than fearing it. Yeah, I'm working on all that right now.
Well, one thing you don't have to work on too hard is giving back and paying forward to help and support, because you certainly do that all the time.
Well,
I mean,
well,
the fact that you're willing to share these feelings and emotions.
Yeah.
And you do have a couple little things on the side there, acceptance. Like, I am a divorced woman who is
mm-hmm.
married to a gay
mm-hmm.
man. I did not cause this to happen. It
mm-hmm.
happened to me.
Mm-hmm. I really believe those things,
Mm-hmm. He will never understand what he put me through, nor will he ever apologize for it. This is not what I envisioned for my life, but it is what it is. I will be okay. This will not consume me anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I did the right thing in choosing to lead a toxic relationship, even though it meant breaking vows.
Mm-hmm.
More inner peace and self-sufficiency, less wrenching heartache, more joy,
mm-hmm.
able to be alone and not lonely, as you said before,
mm-hmm.
for that,
mm-hmm.
And putting my story in writing, but also adjustment. You have, I am responsible for everything now, from tires to taxes to tending the house, making all the decisions about my present life and my future.
That's very hard.
That's really difficult. Still learning to cope with all this singleness and stillness in the house. Friday nights, Saturday mornings, Sunday afternoons, dinner time, holiday weekends,
mm-hmm.
which probably would be the same way regardless when your children get older.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's empty.
It probably has nothing to do with the marriage.
Yes, it is. It's emptiness.
Right.
Yeah.
But he was empty of it anyway, so it probably wouldn't have mattered.
Yeah.
But waves of anxiety intertwined with true contentment and self-confidence and finding new hobbies and interests.
Mm-hmm.
And then your last column, wondering, should I believe in marriage? Should I ever believe in marriage again? Will I ever trust anyone again?
Mm-hmm.
Am I too old to have adolescent dreams? How do you know if it will work? Is it worth putting myself out there? Can I trust
mm-hmm.
myself?
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I say these are all things, and Wendy's really clear in making it, you know, understandable that some women take longer to go through certain stages. Sometimes you go backwards, right, Wendy?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You can be in one stage and then find yourself slipping back to stage one or two.
Yep. Yep.
Because a lot of those emotions are intertwined together.
Mm-hmm. But as you are moving forward and you can look back, it's very satisfying to realize, you know, I did get through that. I never thought I would, but I did. And then, you know, now where I'm struggling, I don't have the answers yet, but I am confident that I'll get through it. And you know, until you take that first step, you're not going to, you know, you've got to keep putting one step in front of the other. And for a long time, that's all I did. And that's okay. That's really
And you know
okay.
what? I think that life is always going to be a struggle. I mean, I think that's just what life is about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's learning
mm-hmm.
how to face new struggles,
mm-hmm.
how to overcome them,
mm-hmm.
how to, you know, make new achievements.
Right.
I mean, you had a great promotion at your job this year.
Yes.
You know, put you in a different financial situation.
Right.
These were major, major things that happened in your life.
Right.
And guess what? They just didn't happen. They happened because you worked so hard for them.
Mm-hmm.
you know.
And we're all dealt a different set of cards, and it's interesting. Just the other day, this week, I connected with a friend from high school on Facebook that I had not seen, I mean, literally since 1976. So almost 40 years since I've seen her. And, you know, like, oh, my gosh, what have you done the last 40 years? Well, you know, I know my story. Well, come to find out, she had a special needs child, you know, who wasn't expected to live to 5. He's now 28, and she's coping with all kinds of medical issues with him. And, you know, I look at her in such admiration for, you know, all that she's putting up with. And then she looks at me and, you know, in awe of what I've come through. So I'm learning as I get old, just turned 55, that we all have a journey to walk.
Exactly.
And, you know, it was very naive of me to think I was going to live happily ever after. And I certainly didn't turn out that way. But I think that's just, you know, everybody has their twists and turns of their journey.
Right. You don't have to be happily ever after. You can be happier than before. How's that?
Right. Yeah. Yeah, there you go. Yep.
I think that's a good goal.
Yep.
You know, it's
yep.
funny, before we end, I've been turned on to a wonderful new woman who lives in South Africa.
Oh, my goodness.
I know. I was really amazed. And it was through Maureen Tillman, who's, you know, part of our support network, who does the beautiful
yes.
healing jewelry.
Yes.
And Maureen has a beautiful website. And I was looking at some of her people that she likes their websites.
Uh-huh.
And this wonderful woman, her name is Carol, and she's in South Africa, who has written this wonderful book about abuse of women. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, it's hard to get in the United States, so I have my publisher working on republishing it here.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is that on her blog, she has something posted I think just looks beautiful, and her blog is Abuse is No Excuse at blogspot.com.
Ah.
But she has this picture, and I just love it. I put it in for the next newsletter. It says, "Never regret anything, because at one time it was exactly what you wanted."
Hmm.
And isn't that true?
Mm-hmm.
You know, whenever we have regrets, we shouldn't have done this or that, or why did we do it?
Mm-hmm.
We did it because at that time we wanted to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we didn't know what consequences were going to be involved.
Mm-hmm.
But you never have to second-guess yourself. Was I smart?
Right.
Was I stupid? At that moment, it fit your needs.
Exactly. Exactly. And, you know, I have two beautiful children. Had I not married him, I would not have them. So,
right.
Know,
so you try to always look for the positive.
Reason. Yeah, yeah.
And, Wendy, if you didn't marry him, I would have never gotten to know you.
That is
That's
true.
My big plus of your bad marriage.
That is true.
So you shouldn't think that it didn't go to any kind of real positive effect here.
Wow.
I'm so happy you married a gay man, Wendy, so you could be such an important part in my life and inspire me. Like, how selfish is that?
But I wouldn't be going on this wonderful vacation in 3 weeks, right?
Yes, exactly. I wouldn't be getting to Houston or anything.
Yeah.
It's really amazing.
Oh, my
but
goodness.
For those women who are
well,
going to be coming
true.
To Houston, you're going to be able to meet Wendy and give her a big hug yourself. You'll be
oh,
inspired
my.
By her
be
words.
So cool.
And I know, Wendy. You
yeah.
are so cool. You're such an inspiration to so many of us, and I can't thank you enough for being our guest.
I really appreciate your support. You know that. You know.
Yeah, you have it all. You're my
mentor.
You're my hero.
Wow.
You really
back
are.
Back at you, as they say.
Yeah, I'll tell you. I'm waiting for Wendy's.
Some new people can come to Houston. That would be
yeah,
wonderful.
They are coming. New people are coming, and they'll be inspired by you.
Yeah, no matter what stage of recovery you're in, you know, we're all there to help everybody, help each other. So.
Yeah,
really
next week we're
going
to have, next week Debbie Thomas Brown's going
to
be our
yes,
guest.
Yes, met her at that retreat last year. Very
yeah,
inspirational and supportive.
Very.
Yes.
And the week after that, Grace is going to be our
wow,
guest.
Wow, wonderful.
Isn't that exciting?
Yes.
Grace
yes.
has really been there to help our women who have husbands in total denial.
Yes.
So Grace is a blessing
yes.
to us also.
Yes.
So, Wendy, I love you.
Well, back at you, my friend.
And I'll be waiting for that big hug in a couple of weeks.
Okay. Sounds
all right,
great.
For our women, if you have any questions at all, if you want a copy of Wendy's list, just email me at bondk@aol.com, and I'll send it right out to you. Wendy, I look forward to having you back here in the spring.
All righty. Sounds great.
All right, talk to you soon,
good night.
And good night, everybody.
Good night.
Bye-bye.